Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Zayin Amud Bet. V'amar Rav Gidol Merav. Minayin shenishba'im dekayem et ha-mitzvah. How do I know that you take a shvuah to mekayem a mitzvah? We'll discuss this in a second. This is a major machloket rishonim, exactly what happens here, what's trying to be accomplished here. Shenemar, because the pasuk in Tehilim says, nishbate v'kayema lishmor mishpatei tzidkecha. So I take a shvuah that I will uphold or I will keep. Two, lishmor mishpatei tzidkecha, to keep the laws, your righteous laws, which seems to indicate that he's taking a shvuah to be mikayim, to uphold laws that already exist, the laws of the Torah. The Gemara asks the question, v'alo mushbavo made mehar Sinai, who? Isn't he already under a shvuah from Har Sinai, referring to the Brit of Arvot Moav, l'avrecho b'rit Hashem lokecha v'alato, so that there is a shvuah that already exists from Har Sinai, and we have a principle, ein shvuah chalal shvuah, that once you have a shvuah in place, you can't have another shvuah sitting on top of that shvuah. So over here, when the person is taking a shvuah to be mikayim mitzvot, what in essence is he accomplishing, besides for maybe a shvuah levatala, because it doesn't have any impact, it doesn't take effect. Now whether this is from the Gemara itself, or this is part of Rav Gidol Merav's statement, is not clear. But either way, the Gemara says, Alaha Kamash Malan, the Sharile the Inche the Zruze Nafshe, that a person is permitted to use this as a vehicle for encouraging himself to do something or to engage in something or to be on top of something. So that's the conclusion of the Gemara. The Gemara will bring another statement from Gidol Merav, which we'll deal with in a second. Over here, the Rishonim take varying views about what just happened in the Gemara, and really they go from one end to the other end. Look on the Tosafot says, Kamash Malan, what is the Gemara's conclusion over here? The Shari the Zruze Nafshe, Perush, Velo Mitzar Mishum de Motzi Shem Shamayim de Vatala. You didn't just put out a Shvuah de Vatala. Avalo Mairi the Inyan Shvuah Bitue, but it has no impact in terms of a Shvuah Bitue. Meaning that a Shvuah Bitue would then have restrictions, Vaharalo Etiv, and then if you violate the Shvuah, you'd be culpable for violating that Shvuah. In terms of a shvuah, it has no impact whatsoever. This is not a shvuah that takes effect. So then, why do it? Well, he says, you don't have to do it. It's just, in the end, it's mutar. It's not classified as a shvuah levatala. It's okay, it's not something that will be considered negative. But if you were to ask, based on the Baal HaTosfot, whether you should do this or not, seemingly, there's no purpose and no reason to do it. Just, if you do do it, then there's no shvuah levatala, as if this was a common practice amongst the people, and all they're saying is, okay, we'll let that go. There's no real binding nature to that shvuah, but there's nothing wrong with what they're doing. The Rosh says something similar and builds on top of that. He says the same thing as the Baal HaTosfot, which is, lo b'maski Hashem shemayim levatala, mishba b'shem. Even if you use the Shem Hashem, it's not maskir shvuah levatala. V'im nishba b'lo shem nami. Salkadat chamina, dasur. Even if you don't use the Shem Hashem, I would think it's problematic. Kadesh lo yidragela dam b'shvuot. That a person shouldn't become frequent or accustomed to making shvuot. V'yavoli shavah, gamal dvarim acherim. And then you'll start taking shvuot willy-nilly, similar to the Rabbeinu Yonah, with regards to speaking truth in Masechet Avot. The Rabbeinu Yonah says about that, that a person shouldn't even lie as a joke. Because if a person's mitragel, a person becomes accustomed to lying, even in areas where maybe it's mutar, or maybe it's just a joke, then the person learns in general to lie. It teaches themselves to mimic that behavior, even in situations where they shouldn't. And the same thing here, the Rosh says, maybe you would have thought, if we allow you to do this by mitzvot, that you'll carry it over to other areas where it will be problematic. We don't worry about that. So from the perspective of the Rosh and the Tosafot, this is really, in a sense, a negative view of what just transpired here, which is, we don't generally encourage this. We wouldn't even tell you to do this. But if you do do it, you're not in trouble. That's the way they view it. We have a third view here, which is the view of Duran. Duran says over here that he has no question that the Shvuah takes effect, which is amazing, because the Gemara's question is, Halo Mushvav Omed Mahar Sinayu. Isn't he already governed by another Shvuah? We know ain't Shvuah, Chalo Shvuah. But the Ran says something interesting. He says that if you go to Masechet Shvuot and you look at the exceptions to the rules, which are that you have to, in order to create a Shvuah, you have to conform to the Harala Hitiv. It has to be things the way that it's laid out in the Pasuk. And then if you have a deficit of those things, what the Ran says is that it's not that you don't have a Shavua, you just don't have a Shavua that will result in a Korban if you violate it. And what he says is that you have a Chaluta Shavua without the effects of the punishment through a Korban. And that's the Ran says over here. You don't need this pasuk to tell you that if you take a shvua like this, you're not allowed to profane it, you're not allowed to violate it. The shvua takes effect, because any shvua that you take, even if it doesn't conform to the rules that are found in the psukim, at the end of Parshat Vayikra, nevertheless, that shvua is binding in terms of lo yachel. Just you won't be chayav a korban for it, because it doesn't conform to those things that bring you to a korban. Elohachi kamar, minayin shedavar hagunu, lihishava lekayim et mitzvah. How do you know that it's something good? Fafilu ksherim. Even people who are ksherim, shenimnim mishvua, nishvayim ein bekach. Even though they normally do not take any shvuot, they do engage in these types of shvuot. So here you have from the Ran, almost the opposite picture, which is, over here you have a shvua, which we say you can engage in. Not only can you engage in it, even ksherim engage in it. This is something good, this is something positive. Now, the Ran argues on 2 points. Number one is that the shvua is chal, period. The shvua takes effect. That's the first thing that he says that disagrees both the Rosh and the Tosafot, which is that they both think that the shvua is gone. The shvua has no bearing over here, it's just a question if you did something wrong. Over here, first of all, the Ran says the shvua takes effect. Number two is, not only does it take effect, but we would encourage you to do this. Or it's a davar hagun. It's something that is considered to be good, and something that we would look favorably upon, because even ksheirim, who normally don't take shvuot, we would encourage them to do this, because there's an aspect of a zruzei nafshe, that this is something that helps a person to do the right thing, then we would encourage such behavior. So then, there's another approach, which is the approach of the Rambam. The Rambam has a very unusual approach to Shavuot. We discussed this in the Gemara in Shavuot. The Rambam says, with regards to the Pasuk, Ubishmoti Javeya, that the name of Hashem, you should take a Shavua. Most Rishonim, you can see that already here from the Balei Tosfot, the Rosh, have a very negative view of Shavuot, and we try to avoid them at all costs. A Shavua is something that, when necessary, when a person is compelled for whatever reason to take a Shavua, we take it, but we take it with Yira. We take it with tremendous fear. We don't want to engage in it. And if we can avoid it, we try to find ways to get out of it. And there are even people who are willing to compensate and pay money in terms of their obligations just not to take a Shavua. And so that is the majority view of Rishonim. The Rambam has an unusual view of Shmoti Shaveya, and he counts it in his Sefer HaMitzvot as one of the Minyan HaMitzvot. In Mitzvah Zayin, in the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam says, Ubishmoti Shaveya is a mitzvah to say, that a person has a positive commandment to take Shavuot. And he says it's part and parcel almost of the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem. That if a person takes a Shavua to uphold his position, and he's telling the truth, that's a Kiddush Hashem. Use Hashem's name. You have permission. Not only have permission, you should use Hashem's name, because when people see that you use Hashem's name, and you tell the truth, that's a Kiddush Hashem. Or if you want to deny something, you want to take a shvua to deny it, and you're telling the truth again, that shvua is something that is positive. Now he says it in the context of Beit Din, shvuat ha'dayanim, that's where he says it, but then he adds on in the end, our Gemara over here. He says that not only is a shvua positive in terms of its usage or utility in the context of adjudication, where if you're telling the truth, it's a massive Kiddush Hashem. And if you're lying, it's a huge Chilul Hashem. And he views that as a positive mitzvah. And those people that have these qualities should be taking Shavuot and should be engaging because it's a Kiddush Hashem. He also says, our Gemara here, that a person who wants to Minayin Shnishbayim L'Kayim Et HaMitzvah, he subsumes that under the mitzvah of Ubishmot Tishaveya. He sees that as part and parcel of that mitzvah to take shvuot that are positive, take shvuot that are constructive. And he views this as a constructive shvua. So not only does he see this as permissible, not only does he see it as hagun, like the Ran says, but he sees it as a mitzvah to say, to take a shvua like this, because shvuot that engage the person in positive activities, and a person accomplishes, those are things that are mekadesh shem shemayim. on the spot, the Ramban is Mesig on the Rambam and says that there is no such mitzvah, Vashmoti Shaveya, and that if at all it comes from the remainder of the Pasuk, Ludav Kabo, that you should be close to Hashem. But he doesn't see Uvishmoiti Shaveya, and almost none of the Rishonim agree with the Rambam on this, that there is a mitzvah to take Shavuot. But in his more expansive view of a mitzvah to take Shavuot, you see two manifestations of it. You see it one in cases of adjudication, the other case of our case here, Minayin Shmishbayin L'Kayimim Ta Mitzvah, that not only is it permissible, but it's a mitzvah to do this, that it's something positive and encouraged, and something that might even be commanded by the Torah for us to engage in such world. Rav Soloveitchik takes it one step further and says, what the Rambam means over here is that a person can enter into a brit. A person can enter into a shvu'ah equivalent to lo'ovrachol b'brit Hashem u'ba'al atol, like that was found in Arvot Moav, that a person now, when takes a shvu'ah v'shmoti shaveya, that permissibility of taking a shvu'ah is actually allows the individual to recreate or replicate that which was done in Arvot Moav. Interestingly enough, he also adds that according to the Bahag, who has a shita that in the Minyan Mitzvot, one of the Mitzvot is Behar Gmizim and Har Eival, the Brit that was done when Bnei Yisrael enter into Eretz Yisrael, that Brit is also a Mitzvah, which the Rambam himself rejects as being a part of the Minyan Mitzvot because it's only a Mitzvah the Shah, not the Dorot. The Ramban over there criticizes him and says maybe it's not a mitzvah the Dorot, but as a chalut, the Dorot. But nevertheless, Rav Soloveitchik says you could be mechadesh, according to the Bahag, that a person who takes a shvuah, the kayim and mitzvot, might actually be obligated, based on the mitzvah of Har Gizim and Har Eival, that an individual can actually obligate themselves in a brit or a mitzvah, based on that. That's a mitzvah the Dorot. And because of that, he could actually over here, when he's nishba, the kayim et mitzvot, it might be actually a part of this concept of the mitzvah of establishing a brit at Har Gizim and Har Eival. And the Rambam and the Bahag will actually be arguing when you're nishba, the kayim et mitzvot, what is the source for that? Is it the brit in Arvot Moav? That's what the Rambam says. Or is it the brit at Har Gizim and Har Eival? And that's what the Bahag says. So here we saw four different approaches to the Gemara over here. Now the Gemara moves on to another statement of Rav Gido Merav and tries to understand in the context of the previous statement what is new here. Amar Gido Merav, Homer Ashkim Veshne Perek Ze. I'm going to get up early tomorrow. I'm going to learn this Perek. Eshne Masechta Zu. I'm going to learn this Masechet. Neder Gadol Nadar Lelukei Yisrael. He now took a tremendous neder to Hashem. Amar Ask again. Velo Mushpab Omeid Mehar Sinai Hu. What type of question is this? Here you say, I'm going to learn Torah. Learning Torah is already a mitzvah which one is obligated in. Vein shvua, chalal shvua. And you can't have a shvua, chalal shvua, which was, again, implied in the previous statement as well, that you can't have that. So, my kamash malon, what does this teach us? Tafili zuze be'alma. So it teaches us, again, that you're allowed to do this, the same answer the Gemara gave before, which is shar de'inche, the zuze nafshe. Where it says, hainu d'rav gilil kamaita. That's the same thing as he said in the previous statement. You've got to come up with something new here, because otherwise, why did he make two different statements? The two different statements are teaching you two different dinim. Hakamash malon. This is what it teaches you. Since he has the ability to accomplish the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah, or to discharge his obligation of Limud HaTorah through simply reading Kriyat Shema in the morning and the evening, therefore, the Shvua takes effect over here. So now here again, you have varied views within the Rishonim. Part of the issue is, David, what you raised over here, that there is no Lashon Shvua over here. So if there is no Lashon Shvua, what exactly went on? What exactly happened over here? The other problem that you have, and this is raised by the Ran and the Tosafot, which is that he did not use a Lashon of Neder. The Gemara concludes that he made a great neder to Hashem, but both point out, and we pointed out in the Rav Akiva Eiger earlier on in the Masechta, that you can't create a positive statement through a neder. The Gemara over there differentiated between a shvuah and a neder. A shvuah is on the gavra, a neder is on the chefetz. You cannot create a neder that demands of you to take a positive action, because if a neder focuses on the object, you can't demand a positive action vis-a-vis the object. You can only talk about the object itself, and the object itself can only be mutar or asur. But you can't create the demand for action towards it. So both the Tosafot and the Ran note that over here. And they said there's no way that you can create a neder in this manner. Therefore, they both come to the conclusion, and the Ran mentioned this earlier, that when you take a shvua b'lashon neder, or a neder b'lashon shvua, it basically becomes a yad to the other side. And so therefore here, even though he used a lashon neder, and that's what the Gemara calls it, a neder, nevertheless, it's a yad l'shvua. And even though he phrased it wrong, and he used the lashon of neder, nevertheless, it takes effect as a shvua. And what the Gemara really meant to say here is that you now have a shvua. What you also have to say, which is not clear in the Gemara, is that he actually used the lashon shvua. Right, so that's not found in the Gemara. He never said anything, but what you have to say is that he did it in such a manner that he thought he was taking a neder, a shvua. That's obviously absent from the text, according to Tosafot and Ran, but they both agree here. Afakav d'kamart neder gadol, shvua kamart. D'amar behedje b'shvua eshene peregzeh. And that's what he says here. He explicitly said, eshene peregzeh as a shvua, and not simply as, I'm going to do this. So that's the way the Ran and the Tosafot learn it. The Rosh, on the other hand, says, lav hainu neder mamash. This is not a real neder. You know why? To lo ikre neder, ele shematpis bedavar hanadur. Because you can only have a neder when you use hatpasa. This is the Rosh, the Shitato, and the majority of the Rishonim, that you require hatpasa, which is that you use something that is nadur, to carry over that kedusha into the neder isur that you're trying to create. And that's completely absent over here. Ela, mechashvin alei kilu nadar tztaka. He says, no, it's equivalent of a neder tztaka. And we know when it comes to neder tztaka, that you can do that b'ficha, that even verbal commitment to give tztaka is binding, because the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah learns out from b'ficha, and we saw that also in yesterday's daf, the obligation to uphold your commitments to tztaka. And that means that even through simple articulation, that's enough of a commitment that you're now bound below yachel, that you may not violate that. And he says the same thing is true over here, that if one takes a neder to do a mitzvah, or to do something positive, it's no different than staka, and therefore the neder is binding, not mitzad neder, not mitzad shvua, but mitzad nidrei staka, which is mitzad commitments. When you make a commitment to do something like this, you are bound to that commitment. And so to over here, you made a commitment, and therefore now you are bound to do this. And he says, b'shenederim chalim al dvar mitzvah kedvar rishut. Because nidarim take effect on a dvar mitzvah kedvar rishut, we'll see that later on, that as opposed to shvua, where your mushva v'omid b'har Sinai cannot be chal al mitzvah, a neder, since it focuses on the object, you're able to take a neder that has impact on mitzvot. So you can be oser, a person can be oser himself an object of a mitzvah, that in the end will preclude him from accomplishing the mitzvah. There's only one lulav, and he takes a neder anav from that lulav, in the end he can't perform the mitzvah of lulav, because he didn't take a shvua against the Torah, he just restricted himself in an object that now will preclude him from accomplishing the mitzvah. But that is only true, he says, ben neder gamur, shemat pis b'davar asur. That's only when you take a full-fledged neder. But this type of neder, where you're making a commitment, like the commitment to tztakah, if that goes against something in the Torah, or that's something already established in the Torah, it doesn't take effect. So that's why the Gemara here has to come up with a way that it can take effect. What's the way that it takes effect? Is by the fact that you're doing something beyond the demand in the Torah. Now this is interesting, it's actually a machloket Tanaim in the Gemara Menachot as to what is the extent of the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. How much does one have to learn to discharge their obligation to learn Torah every day? It's interesting enough that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is Kulo Torah, and we know from the Gemara in Brachot, champions the opinion of learning all day and all night and not working at all. He's the one who actually is of the opinion that it's sufficient to learn in the morning and learn at night, Kriyat Shema B'Boker, Kriyat Shema B'Erev. That's sufficient in terms of your accomplishment of Limud HaTorah. And there the Amoraim argue whether you should tell us the Amei Aretz, don't tell us the Amei Aretz, whether it be positive or negative in terms of its impact of the limitations on Limud HaTorah. But the Ran here says that that just can't be the case, that that's a limitation. Because we know, and he writes over here, Mistaverli, the lab doth go behachi miftar. That this can't be absolutely true, that a person discharges their obligation to learn Torah by simply saying kriyat shema in the morning and night. Shrei chayav ko adam lo mot tamid, yoma v'layla. Person is chayav to learn day and night, kefi kocho, according to his own strength and his power. And we also say in the Gemara in Kiddushin, "V'shinamtam levanecha, shinamtam levanecha to you divrei Torah mechudadim v'ficha," that they have to be sharp on your tongue. That if someone asks you something, I'll take up game. That you aren't flustered and you aren't hesitant in your response. And certainly saying Kriya Shema in the morning and night will not accomplish that level of Limud HaTorah. And therefore the Ran launches into a view that he has in the Gemara in Shavuot, and that he reiterates over here, which is that we only say Ein Shavuah Chalal Shavuah or Mushavah Bo'Meid Mahar Sinai about things that are explicit in the Torah. Things that are written, Katuv B'Torah. So that's what the Gemara's question over here is. In terms of Patar Nafshei B'Kriyat Shema Shacharit V'Arvit, that's written in the Torah. So you can accomplish Limud HaTorah in that way. Therefore, the extension to learn Torah beyond that, that is not explicit in the Torah. That's a drasha. Adav Yishinamtam Levanecho, whether it's from the Pasuk in Yoshua, Yigito Bo Yomam Palayla, that you're engaged or engrossed in Torah day and night, those are all Limudim. And therefore, they're not subject to Mushba V'Omeid Mihar Sinai. And that's the Gemara's answer over here. And this is what the Ran says. This is support to my Shita, that when you have something that's not explicitly in the Torah, Mekan Nirali Raya Lamash Shekatavti Perek Shvut Shvayim Batra D'Chomidei D'Atami Drosha Apo Pishu Mina Torah Kevin D'Letem B'Furash B'Kra B'Hedja, since it's not explicit in the Pasuk, Shvu Achal Olav. And he says, the Gemara is backing me up over here. Mishum Hachi Chala Shvu Alei L'Gamre Afilu L'Korban. So he says, that's the Chiddush over here, that this Shvuah takes effect fully. And again, the Ran Lashita Toh that believes that it's not a neder over here, but a Shvuah, takes full effect. And if you're in violation of it, you'd have to bring a Korban. This is a full-fledged Shvuat Bitui over here, and that's what the Gemara is trying to accomplish. Right? It does lead to the Machloket in general about the obligation of Limud HaTorah, both from the perspective of the Machloket Tanaim, as to what the minimum shear of Limud HaTorah is, as well as to the Achronim, as to what a person's obligation in Limud HaTorah is. Is a person's obligation to be Lomei Torah, Yomam V'Laila, period. And then, if you have to, Bidi Avad, we allow you dispensations to work. We allow you dispensations to take care of matters. Then, for instance, sleeping and eating. Because, otherwise, obviously, you wouldn't be able to learn Torah. But those are all dispensations, Bidi Avad, for you to get out of Limud HaTorah. Or, is the mitzvah Limud HaTorah and the Gra in some ways expresses Limud HaTorah in this way, which is, Limud HaTorah is to learn Torah in all your free time. That whenever you have time that you're not using, that you're not engaged in something, that's when you have an obligation to be Lomei Torah. So it's not that the Limud HaTorah or the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah is constant, and then every time you're doing something, you're looking for a dispensation, it's bidyabad, but rather, it is L'chatchila. Whenever you have time on your hands, you should be learning Torah. And therefore, obviously, you could busy yourself in a way that you'll never have free time. But one has to then make the conscious effort to maneuver their life or manage their life in a way that they do have the free time to learn Torah. And that's interesting here. When the Ran says here, kafi kocho, a person has to learn according to his strength. What exactly he means by that? Is that similar to what the Gra says, which is that in your free time or according to, or is it kafi kocho talking about the person's capabilities in terms of learning and not simply about the quantitative amount of learning that one does, but at least raises that interesting issue in the Machloket about what exactly is the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. Now we move on to the next statement of Amar Gidol Merav. We have another statement here, Amar Gidol Merav. Homer lechavero nashkim v'nishne perek zeh. Let us get up together and learn this perek tomorrow. Alav lashkim. He must get up. Now again here, Machloket Rishonim, about what the obligation is, especially in the context of what the Gemara says next, which is Shenemar. Proof text is from the Pasuk in Yechezkel, where it says, Ve'omer Eli, Kum tse el abika, v'shama deber otach. Hashem says to Yechezkel, go out to the valley, and over there I will speak to you. And then it continues later on, the Pasuk says, Ve'tse el abika, Yechezkel says, I went out there. V'nei sham kvod Hashem olmeid. And there Hashem is, the presence of Hashem is already there. He's waiting for me. So what do you see from this? You see that Hashem told him to be there, and he came. What's the proof? What is the connection between the Pasuk and what is said here, Alav Lashkim? So the Ran over here says, Dachi Marmar, Kevin Shabar Nashkim, Hare Kibel Alav, Shuyu Me'orer Badavar, Kishem Shu Me'orer Akshav, Vitarte Kamashmon. just like he is awake today, he is now saying that I will be awake then to do this. And therefore, there are two conclusions here. Chado, the Bekabbalah, Ba'almo, the Dvar Mitzvah Mahanyo. Similar to what the Rosh said in the previous Sugya of Rama Gilarav, the Ran says over here, that a Kabbalah to do a Mitzvah is a Kabbalah, is a demand that you do that. If you accept and make a commitment to do a Mitzvah, you need to do the Mitzvah. The Rosh said this about the previous case. The Ran says that over here, that even without a neder, without a shvuah, the verbal commitment over here is enough to obligate the individual to carry this out. And on top of that, we have teach you that you got to get up. Not only is this binding as a commitment in a sense, but also you have to then live up to that commitment. So those are the two things that we learn out from here, is that here you can make commitments that are not shvuot, not nidarim, but if they involve positive mitzvot or doing something that is considered to be a mitzvah, then you are committed to do that and you must get up. So that's one way to phrase it. The Rosh, on the other hand, has to come up with something new, because the Rosh just said before that the previous statement of Rabbi Gilma Rav taught you that. So the Rosh says, Alav Lashkim, Alhomer Lashkim Techila. The one who makes the commitment has to be there first. Because what did you see? Hashem tells Yechezkel to meet him in the Bikah. When Yechezkel gets there, Hashem's already waiting for him. So you see that Hashem, who asked Yechezkel to be there, was there first, waiting for Yechezkel. And the Rosh says, that's what the limud is here from Gilma Rav. That when the person says, let us get up and learn, he's got to be there first. The person who asked and one who made the commitment, Alav Lashkim, he has to get up and he has to be there first, just like Yechezkel and Hashem, that Hashem was standing there first. Others still say that Alav Lashkim is that even if the other party doesn't show up, that he still has an obligation to be there and to be there first. Now, the Gilyon HaShas of Akiva Eger points you to Shmot Yutet Tetzayin, to Rashi and Chumash, where Rashi talks about when it came to Matan Torah, that Hashem had been Koveya Matan Torah, then we know the famous Midrash, that who was waiting there? Hashem is waiting in Har Sinai when Bnei Yisrael show up, and it should have been the other way around. Bnei Yisrael should have been there up early to meet Hashem, because they had made the commitment, Naseh v'nishma, and that they want to hear directly from God, and they want to be there at Har Sinai. So then it should have been Alahem Lashkim. They should have been there first. And part of the reason that we stay up all night on the night of Shavuot is for that reason to, in a sense, rectify that mistake that we weren't there first when it came to Kabbalat Torah. But again, Rabbi Akiva Eger references or cross-references that Rashi because of the context here, Olav Lashkim, that he has to get up. So now the Gemara continues. I'm Rabbi Yosef. Nidu b'chalom, person who's excommunicated in a dream, tzarich asara b'nei adam latir lo. He needs 10 people in order to create that Torah. V'ho datanu hilchata. And that is if they learn halachot. All right, now, first of all, there are a lot of pieces to the puzzle here. First of all, he's excommunicated in a dream. So the first thing that Rabbi Yosef says is you need to get hatara. You need to be released from that nidui. In order to be released from that nidui, you need 10 people. Why 10 people? We never find hatara from nidui that requires 10 people. It's either maybe one, possibly mumche, three other individuals, a beit din of sorts. Never find yud. So most of the Rishonim here explain that the necessity for yud over here is because you need a minyan. And a minyan, as the Rosh says, al kol be'asara yishchina, v'arehuta lo b'oto beit din shenitna deh. The fact that he was put into excommunication in a dream seems to be that he is excommunicated min hashamayim. That means from Kodesh Baruch Hu or from the Shechina. And therefore, in order to create a hatara, he needs to use something that generates Shechina in the hatara. And therefore, when you bring 10 people together, that brings to hashrat hashchina. And through that Hashrat Hashkina, they're able to now to be matir as if they're matir min Hashemayim. That's number one. Behu detanu hilchata. And they learn halachot, hilchata over here. You can see some of the Rishonim describe hilchata over here as halacha l'moshe misinai. These are individuals who learn halacha l'moshe misinai, so that might be an extension of the Yud B'nei Adam. They have to be 10 people who have halacha l'moshe misinai who are ru'uyim l'Hashrat Hashkina. That might be what is being demanded over here. Aval matnu velotanu, then you move on. If they matnu velotanu, lo, it's not sufficient. Now, that's interesting because there are different ways to read this. Aval matnu velotanu, if they only learn Torah, but they do not teach Torah, it will not be sufficient. That's the way the Ran reads it. Others read, aval matnu, that they learn Mishnayot, velotanu, they don't learn Gemara, that's not sufficient. That would go back then, you'd have to translate Tanu Hilchata as being someone who's learning Gemara. Ve'i leka de Tanu Hilchata. If you have no one who teaches, whether this means Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, no one who teaches in general, none doesn't learn Gemara, afilu matnu velotanu, then it'll be sufficient. Either only someone learns Mishnayot, only someone who learns but doesn't teach. That's our backup. If you can't get the first string, the first line, then the backup is that you use these type of people. Ve'leka. And if you don't even have this, leizav aleitev aparshat rachim, then he should go sit at the fork in the road. Ve'ayiv shalma lebeyud, and he should greet 10 people. Ad mikle le'asarad gamrei yochata, until he ends up with 10 people that teach halachot, that are qualified to be matir the neder. Okay, so that's a good question. What exactly happened over here? Again, subject to a machloket rishonim. You can see over here in the Ran, and the Balei HaTosafot have a similar view, which is ki heche de la hadre le shalma, that they will respond to him shalom, umoil lo, detlot lo lahagin lo min asurim, that that will provide him the protection, the interim protection, until people come along that he can be matir the neder. So both the Tosafot and the Ran brings a similar interpretation, which is that this is a protection in the interim. It's equivalent to an asham talui. Person brings an asham talui when they're uncertain about the violation, in order to protect themselves until they know for certain, they bring a chatat. So this is the same thing over here. You need some sort of interim protection from this excommunication. Obviously, they're excommunicating you because you did something wrong or upset about something. Therefore, you want protection. The greeting with shalom is a form of protection. And partly why we, when we do Kiddush Levana, also we do this Shalom Aleichem, or this idea of greeting, affords people a certain amount of protection. But that is only to wait. It's a holdover until you get the 10 people that will suffice in order to be matir the neder. That's the way that the Tosafot and the Ran read it. On the other hand, there are others who suggest that this itself generates the hatara. That if you get shalom aleichem from 10 people, that in a sense accumulates or cumulatively creates the hatarat nidarim that you need. And that instead of getting 10 people who are tana hilchuta together in one shot, you do it in a cumulative fashion. So whether it means here that you get 10 people and if you wish people shalom aleichem, until you wait there, until you get the 10 people, that doesn't mean that they have to all come 10 together, but you'll get the hatara by 10 individuals that it will accumulate or cumulatively will give you the effect of a hatara from 10 people. So that's another way that Rishonim suggest over here. And Rashi suggests it straight out. Rashi says that as you have 10 people respond to your Shalom Aleichem, that in and of itself is matir the issue or the nidui at hand here. So again, different approaches to what the sitting at the Pashat, the fork on the road, does for you. By the way, just as an aside, it tells you the power of greeting and saying Shalom Aleichem to people over here. They view it as, at minimum, a protection from Yisurim, and even possibly, according to Rashi, it's matir and nidui. So it's something to take seriously when the Beit Shammai says in Pirkei Avot, mikabel et kol adam b'sefer panim yafot, that you greet people, that there is a tremendous thing to greeting people. All right, Amar le Ravina le Ravashi, yada man shamte mahu delishrele. If in his dream, the person who put him into excommunication, he knows. It's somebody that he is familiar with. So in his dream, so-and-so comes in his dream and excommunicates him. Can he then, after he wakes up, go back to that person and ask him to be matir the excommunication, even though the person himself knows nothing about it, and all happened in the dream? Amalei, the shmute shavua shliach, the mishrele lo shavua shliach. So it's an interesting answer to the Gemara, that min hashamayim, they gave permission to this individual to excommunicate you. They didn't give him permission to free you from that excommunication. The fact that he appeared in the dream to excommunicate you means that he was empowered, min hashamayim, to come and do that. On the other hand, he was not empowered to free you from that excommunication, and therefore you can't go to him to do it. You have to follow the protocol that is over here. So I'm like, Ravacha, Ravashi. Okay, so let's take the next step. What happens if Shamte v'sharolei v'chalmei mai? What happens if in the dream he was excommunicated and released from the excommunication in the dream? So you said before, well, if he was a messenger for one thing, maybe he's not a messenger for the other. But here in the dream, both things happen. Both the person was excommunicated and released from that excommunication. So the Gemara's answer is amazing. Amalei, Kashem, this is from the Gemara in Brachot with regards to dreams. That there the Gemara in the ninth parak talks about all different types of dreams and the meaning behind dreams. And also talks about the dreams of Yosef. And the Rishonim quote this with regards to the dreams of Yosef. Kashem Shi'iv Shah the Bar below Tevin. Just like there's no possibility of getting Tvu'ah, the part of you that the grain that you want, without Tevin, without all the refuse, without all the straw and the shells that come off of them, Kach Yiv Shah the Chalom below Dvarim B'Telim. It's impossible to have a dream that doesn't have things in it that are also not true. A dream is made up of parts that are true, parts that are just exactly that, a dream. Things that are manifestations of a person's life or what he's thinking about during the day, and so on and so forth, are not necessarily messages min hashamayim. Now this definitely comes out of the concept that chalom is a form of nivuah. And that's borne out by the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that compares a chalom to nivuah, and also over there uses the terminology of tevin and bar. And so the Gemara here is using that pasuk from Yirmiyahu to tell us something about it. First of all, that chalom has a din like nivuah, but more importantly, that even when you have a chalom like nivuah, that's not absolute. It's not something that is always absolutely true or gives you only absolute truth. And therefore, now you're in a bind. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is, the excommunication in the dream was the true part of the dream. The freeing from the excommunication was the part of the dream that wasn't true. And therefore, you have to worry about this, and you have to get yourself released from the excommunication that is done in this dream. You have to assume, or be choshesh, for the fact that the true part was the negative, and the untrue part was the part that freed you from the excommunication. Therefore, you'd still be subject to the protocol. You'd have to actually get a hataret nidarim through the 10 people that we said before. The Ran over here has a very interesting question. He says, "V'tzar chiyun, b'mishni do b'chalomo. Once you put into a niduin a chalom, im tzarech lenhog bo b'chol dinei minudeh. Does he become a minudeh now? What type of excommunication does this create? What type of factor does this create? Umistavrali." He says, it's clear to me, Da'akabab darin and ochanami shinidu b'chalomo tzarech heter, in limo mikan l'mishin adar b'chalom. What happens if a person takes a neder in a chalom? Shei tzarech heter. You don't need to get hatarat nidarim. So he says, I'm certain about a neder. If you take a neder in a dream, that's not called a neder, and therefore you do not have to get hatarat nidarim. Basically because neder has a requirement of hafla'a. Neder has a requirement to be articulated, has to be some piv v'libo shavim. There are all these requirements that we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta that do not come about in a chalom. And therefore he says, by a neder in a chalom, be sure that you do not need to get hatarat nidarim. But then he mentions, I saw in the Shuta Rashba that Masa Balafanov Vitzrichu Eter. The Rashba says that I had a case like this, and he told the guy to get Hatarat Nidarim. So, if a person is worried, he says you can get Hatarat Nidarim. But he doesn't think, Meikar Adin, that you should require Hatarat Nidarim, because the Nether can't come into effect or can't take force in this type of manner. But he still has a Safek with regards to Nidoy. This might go back to, I mentioned earlier, Rav Soloveitchik has a chakira within Minudeh, that there are two aspects to a person who's put into Nidui. One is that he becomes a Minudeh, he becomes a shame of a person who is in excommunication. And separately, there are things called Isurim that are associated with the Minudeh. One might be a byproduct of the other, which is that if you're a Minudeh, then coming along with that are the Isurim that are associated with it. But he was able to bifurcate between these two different aspects of it, which is, one is that is he have a shame minudeh, and number two is the surim. And so what the Ran's question over here is exactly that. Can the person be a minudeh without the surim of nidui? And that's exactly what he's doing, separating out these two aspects. You might be a minudeh, but not subject to the surim. Or, is it a derivative or a byproduct? If you're a minudeh, automatically, then you have this outcome, which is that you are subject to the Misurim of Nidui. One of the issues that is difficult over here is that what was the solution to someone was put into Nidui and he couldn't find 10 people to sit at the fork of the road and greet people? Well, wait a minute. Shalom Aleichem, greeting people, is one of the restrictions of a nidui. Someone who's excommunicated cannot interact with people, or other people cannot interact with him. So how is that a solution to the problem? Elohim, can you say for sure he's not subject to the Isurim? So that might be a proof or an answer to this question of the Ran. Although you could answer that there he's in the process of Hatara. And since each Shalom Aleichem, at least according to Rashi, is part of the Meheter of the Nidui, it's part of the process of release, and therefore it might be Mutar, not because of the Isurei Nidui don't apply, but because you're releasing yourself from them, and then each person who does it is acting in a manner that releases you, and therefore they're not subject to those things. Or you could argue, and this is much more difficult, that there are different parts of the Isurei Nidui that might apply or may not apply here in the Nidui Min HaShamayim. Right now the Gemara moves on to another question, seemingly disconnected from what we've said before, which is Ravina Avala Nidra de Bitu. Ravina's wife had taken a neder, after the Kamei de Ravashi, he comes before Ravashi, Mlei, Baal, Moshi, Aseh, Shliach, Hataratat, Ishto. Can a husband represent his wife in getting Hatarat Nidarim? So now, what's the question? Number one, a husband has the right to be Mefer the Nidarim of his wife. So what happened here, and all the Rishonim point, you can see the Ran, the Rosh, everybody points out, Tosafot says, Mari Shlindarim, either don't have Inui Nefesh, therefore they're not under the ability of the husband, or the rights of the husband to be mefir in order to nullify the neder. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that he heard it. It wasn't mefir. He didn't have sufficient time. He forgot about it. He lost his 24-hour period. Or he was mekayim it. What happened if the husband upheld the neder? So now the neder is in effect. So that hafara is no longer an option because of one of those reasons. But hafara is out of the picture. Now can the husband go before the chachamim and ask for hatarat nedarim of his wife? Again, here, it's subject to major machloket as to what exactly the question is over here. The two major approaches the Ran brings over here, which is, the question is about the husband and no one else, or is the question about everyone else, yes, but the husband, maybe no. And those are the two approaches. The Rambam says over here that clearly the only question is, can a husband do it? Meaning that nobody else could obviously come on behalf of an individual and present the case before the Beit Din, because we don't accept lawyers. We don't accept other people to represent you. Why could the husband come over here? Because Ishto Kigufo. And since Ishto Kigufo, maybe over here the husband has a special dispensation to go on behalf of his wife and to ask for Hatrat Nidarim because of Ishto Kigufo. And that's the question that's being posed over here to Rav Ashi by Ravina, which is, can I act on behalf of my wife? Me, because I'm her husband, can I act on behalf of my wife? There is a totally different view over here, which is the question is not about husband only, but rather the other way around. Anybody else could represent the woman because they do not have a vested interest in the Hatarat Nedarim over here. A husband which is Ishtoki Gufo, and the husband wants the Hetar Nedarim over here because he has a vested interest in seeing his wife freed from it. In that case, can a husband be the one that represents his wife? An independent party, we have no question, because they have no vested interest. They will only represent what the woman told them, and therefore, when they come to the Beit Din, we have no question that that works. On the other hand, by a husband who has no gaba davar, maybe a husband should be precluded. And that's the question over here. The question is not about whether a husband only, but rather, can he be at all a shliach over here, where everybody else could be a shliach? Mara tells us in other places that, even though that we conclude that one is allowed to get a Hatarat Nedarim through a translator. Because generally when we have Edim that testify, they can't testify through a translator, they have to testify with their Mipihem, strictly from what they say. Over here, Davka Turgaman, Mishum Dabala Davar Nami Tamankoi. Over there, it's not a problem, because even when you have a translator there, the party to the Hatara is standing in front of us. So he's present in the Beit Din, and you have here someone else who's translating for him. The question over here is using a messenger, an intermediary, when you're not present. And therefore the question is different. So now the question is, can the Baal do this or not? Tosafot, again, that's the Rambam's view, is whether the husband can do it, only the husband. Tosafot looks at it the other way. Everybody else for sure can do it, but the husband may not be able to do this. And then, very interesting enough, the Kotavot Rabbeinu Shimshon Zal, Shushaleach Adam Charatat Nidro B'Ktav LeBeit Din. First can send to Beit Din in a written way, and they can be matter the nether. The fish is so very rabzal, shafilo below yidiata noder, yacholach hamladir. Because even without the knowledge of the individual, you can have hatarat nederim. Kaven shildeshen uder mitkaret. As long as you know the person who took the neder regrets it, tarat hacham ariki hafarat habal. We're going to see the Gemara equates between hatarat nedarim and hafarat habal. And just like the Baal can nullify his wife's nidarim even without her presence and even without her knowing, so too a chacham can be matir the neder of someone without them knowing about it. V'lo matzinu chiluk ben hafarat habal hatarat hacham el b'lashon. Just the language that you're using. So Rabbeinu Shimshon takes it even further and says, not only can you use shlichim, you can even do it al yedei k'tav. Over here, there's no requirement to do it al pi idim. Right? Those are two major approaches to this. There are three other approaches. The only one that I do want to mention is the Rashbam. The Rashbam has a approach here that says that the continuation over here is not nidra, but Ravina Havala Niduya Ledubitu. His wife was in excommunication. And now Ravina wants to know if he can represent his wife in being matir, the excommunication in this case. Now the reason to do that, the Rashbam says, is otherwise this Gemara is completely disconnected. It's a non sequitur from the previous Gemara. But if you bake it as part of Niduyav, then it now connects to the previous Gemara. And possibly his wife was put into excommunication in a dream. And now he wants to know, can he can be matir, representer in being matir this Niduyav? The Reinu Tam, his brother, argues on him and says that in order to uphold the Rashbam's approach, you have to change the Girsa of too much over here. And the Rabbeinu Tam complains in general about his brother, the Rashbam, that the Rashbam was a poetic, freely changed Gemaras or Girsaot, where it didn't match what he thought. And the Rabbeinu Tam was more conservative and said that we can't just change these Girsaot freely. You have to really have evidence of the fact you need at least Kitfei Yad that supports you. And he does criticize his brother Rashbam, not here, but in other places, in the Sefer Yashar. But over here, he does again criticize his brother for that, saying that there's too many changes in order to uphold your interpretation of the Gemara over here. Now, why Ravina himself didn't do it, we'll see in the Gemara a little bit, but it's very possible that, first of all, Ravina's asking because he's a Nogeh B'davar, and therefore he's asking whether he can be the party to do this, to be Matir the Nether or not. Number two is, maybe, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, that Ravashi is his Rebbe, and therefore Ravina doesn't have a right to be Matir in front of his Rebbe. Or, for whatever reason, Ravina didn't feel himself qualified in order to be Matir in this instance. So he came before Ravashi, Amalei, Baal Maushi Aseh Shleach Charat Ishto, Amalei, Imikant Finin, Ilo, Lo. Says, if they're already gathered together, fine. If not, not. Shma Mina Tzlat. From here, you can conclude three things. Shma Mina, number one is, Baal Naseh Shleach Charat Ishto. Ravashi basically said yes. Under certain circumstances, the answer is yes. But the answer is yes. So according to the Rambam, means that the Baal can do it, and only the Baal. According to the Baalei Tosfot, it means that even the Baal can do it. Shma Mina, Lo Shari the Mishrei Nidra Ba'atru Drabe. Number two is, you see from here that one may not be Matir Neder in the presence of his Rebbe. Because over here, Ravina wasn't Matir the Neder. And therefore, you would come to the conclusion that you can't do this in the Atra of his Rebbe. Now, I'll explain to you in a second why this might be relevant. Shma Mina Ki Michalvin Shapir Dami. And the last thing you learn here is that if they are gathered together, then you can do it. If they're not gathered together, then you cannot do it. Why? What does the fact that the Beit Din is already sitting have to do with anything? So according to the Baalei HaTosafot, who says that, the question here was, can the Baal do it? Everybody else could do it for sure. But the Baal is no Geba Davar, can he do it? Ravashi's answer is, if the Beit Din is already sitting, they can do it. Why? Because then the Baal doesn't have to go any trouble to bring the Beit Din together. And therefore, he will not overstate the charata of his wife, because he just stepped before Beit Din. He didn't do extra effort. He didn't go all over the world to get these three people together. And he says, I'm not doing this again. And then all of a sudden he starts to overstate the charata. So over here, or where we can be sure that he will act like an impartial party, is where the Beit Din is already sitting. But if he has to make efforts to bring the Beit Din together, we don't think he's going to be impartial anymore, and therefore he cannot do it. That's the way that he would explain according to Baalei HaTosafot. I mentioned before that there were others that questioned why Ravina didn't sit over here. That it could have been that Ravina was a Nogeh B'Davar, but if Ravina sits in a Beit Din, we know that if you're amongst three individuals that are there, you can be Matir Neder. Because as a Beit Din, we don't worry about you being Nogeh B'Davar. We worry as an individual, it's a Machlok, it's actually the Chachamim Rabbi Yehuda. Question of how we paskin, that might also affect the Sugya. But if you have three people, then for sure, you could have sat in that Beit Din. And that's what Ravashi might be saying to him. If you have to come to bring the Beit Din together with you, then you can't do it. But if you're already sitting in a Beit Din, and you want to be matzah the neder, then you can be a party to be matzah the neder. The question over here in being a shliach is not whether he can go before a Beit Din, but can he be a participant in a Beit Din? And therefore the answer is, if you're already in a Beit Din, sitting with a Beit Din, then you can do it. But to sit a Beit Din specifically for this, that already we would not say. And the last possibility is that he asked him, can I have my students sit as a Beit Din? Meaning that, can I bring my students together and put a Beit Din together or sit in a Beit Din when my Rebbe is in the city? And the answer he says back to him is, yes, if they're already sitting. If the Beit Din already exists, then it's not a pegia against Rav Ashi, who is the Rebbe. He's not exactly his Rebbe, a Muvok, but it's his Rebbe, or he's the greatest person in the city. But if the Beit Din isn't sitting, and you're specifically bringing a Beit Din together in order to do this, that could be a problem. So that's maybe setting up the limitations that are governing this issue, that you're not going to be matir neder when your Rebbe is there. So now, b'shamto, if someone is in excommunication, I feel about your Rebbe. Even in his Rebbe's city, you're allowed to do it even when he's there. V'yochin mumche shari shamto. In addition to that, a single individual, a mumche, is allowed to be matir a shamto in excommunication. So similar to what we have by Nidarim. By Nidarim, we also have that a mumche can be matir neder by himself. He doesn't need three, as you're told. So too, by shamto, we have the same thing. Here there's a machloket rishonim as to whether this mumche requires smicha or does not require smicha. The Ran says he does not require smicha, just like by Nidarim. He does not require a samuch to be a mumche, so to be, it doesn't require smicha. Others say that shamta excommunication is a different bailiwick, and therefore he might require smicha over here. Now why you're allowed to do the shamta filu ba'atcha derabe is because excommunication is a much more serious issue. And since we don't want to leave the person in that state of shamta, then we want to get him out of it. And that might relate to what we said before, that shamta is an onesh, it's a punishment. We don't want to leave a person in that punishment for too long. Or we're worried about the interaction, that's what the Ran said before, the interaction, the chashka that people will interact, or they won't hold by the excommunication, and that actually will ruin the power of excommunication or the effectiveness of excommunication. Therefore, if the point comes where we should be matir him, even if in the city of his Rebbe, he should do it, because there is value in doing this, not waiting for the Rebbe. By the way, this is very reminiscent of the story by Reish Lakish, where Reish Lakish says that you shouldn't give a psak halacha in the city of your Rebbe, because lo mistayim milta. Because it's time things don't work out properly. It just never works out the right way, and you don't come to the right psak halacha, even though you know the halacha. So there's a similar idea over here, that a person in general should not do these hatarat nidarim, or not act in front of his Rebbe in these situations. But in cases of necessity, then we say, yes, please do it, because it's not a restriction. It's not a sur to do this. And if you do it, it will be effective. It's simply a suggestion that it's better not to do this. It's improper, whether it's because of kavod or because of what Reish Lakish says in the Gemara in Ketubot, lo mistayim milta. But for whatever reason, it's something that is external to the psak itself. And therefore, if one does do it, it is effective. And now the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Shimon ben Zvid, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Tavla, Amar Rav Chiya Arika, Debei, Rav Acha, Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Chanina, Amar Rav Misha, Mishmei the Rabbi Yehuda bar Eli, so one of the longest, right, that's a very long list of Mesora. There are those who split this in half and say they're two different possible Mesorot over here, because this is a very long list of individuals, and also chronologically it doesn't fit exactly. My dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk that is found in Malachi Gimel that we read before Pesach and Shabbat Agadol? So there it says, "V'zarcha lachem irei shmi," that the shemesh will come out for those that fear my name. Elu bnei adam shein yireim lo tzi shem shemayim levatala. These are people that fear saying shem shemayim levatala. Now obviously this connects to the previous gemarot that we spoke about. First of all, we spoke about putting someone into nidoy if they say shem shemayim levatala. Also, the way that the Ran learned in terms of mushba, who made Mar say that you are nishbaim the kayim et mitzvot, they said everybody's there says it's not a violation of shem shemayim levatala. So over here, who's called the yirei Hashem? Someone who doesn't use the name of Hashem in vain. Now the pasuk continues, which was mentioned above. That's why it's in parentheses here, because now the Gemara darshins shemesh tzaka umarpe, that the sun will be something that is of benefit and curative properties. That the dust of the day is curative, and that has this curative properties. This goes back to something that we discussed with the Shita of Rabbeinu Tam, both in the Gemara in Pesachim, in the Gemara in Brachot, in the Gemara in Shabbat, that the way that they believed that the sun went around the earth was that there was a kippah, which was the rakia, that was over the earth, And the sun every day would penetrate through the rakia, through the chalon harakia, through the window of the rakia. It would enter the world, then go over the world, then re-enter on the other side of the rakia, and then go through the kippah. And what makes it dark is it's on the other side, and travel back over this kippah, over this keshet, this bow that you have, and then enter on the other side, on the eastern side every day. So what it says over here is that when the sun is penetrating through the chalon, there's friction over there. And that friction causes dust to come out. And Abayi suggests over here that the chirgu d'yom ha'maaseh, that dust that comes from the sun moving through the rakia, through the chalon, is what creates the curative properties of the sun. Upliga the Rav Shimon ben Lakish, and this argues on Reish Lakish's interpretation of the pasuk, d'mar in gehinom ne'olam haba. And he says there's no such thing as gehinom in the future. Now the olam haba over here, as Aran points out, is not olam haba, like we say after a person passes away, but olam haba means after tchiyat ha-meitim, at the end, the olam haba in that sense. And so now that olam haba, there's no more gehinom. Ella, Kodesh Baruch Hu motzi chama min artika, for Hashem takes out the sun from its encasement, tzadikim mitrapim ba, the tzadikim are cured by it, ushanim nidonim ba, and the ushanim are judged or punished by it. Shinamar. So they quote the pasuk that we have here, and that's why they're saying Reish Lakish disagrees. Zarcha lachem yirei shmi, shemesh tzaka umarpeh. So there you see the curative properties of the shemesh. The pasuk before in Malachi actually says that you will be able to tell between the tzaddik that is yirei Hashem and follows the word of Hashem, and that does not follow the way of Hashem, and then these pasukim come. So they'll be obvious that those that are yirei Hashem and follow the way of Hashem will get the shemesh tzaka umarpeh. V'lo'od. El Shemit Ad Nimba. Not only do they get the curative properties, but they actually enjoy it, and they are almost sunning, basking in the sun. Shneamar, v'yatzatem u'pishtem k'emblei marbeik. That you go out there and lay out like the cows that are grazing in the fields, in that they will enjoy and benefit from the sun. V'arishayim nidonimba. The prior pasuk in Malachi says about the rishayim, shneamar, hinei yom ba bo'er k'tanur. Here comes a day where it's going to be burning like a furnace. So that same sun that is curative and the tzaddikim baskin will burn up the rishayim. But this is all that tid lavo. So Reish Lakish clearly doesn't learn like Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, that v'zachal lechem yirei shmi, is talking about bnei adam that are yireim lotzi shem shem and avatala in this world and at this time. What he exactly argues on is not clear over here, but he disagrees completely and says that this pasuk has nothing to do with today, only to do with Olam Haba. Or does he just argue about the fact that the Shemesh Marpeh is not a general statement, it's only for the Tzaddikim, not for the Rishayim? Or does he simply have a different interpretation of the pasuk? He may not argue fundamentally with what is said by Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. He might simply argue that this is not the source for it, because this pasuk is used for a different reason. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Tet Amud Aleph.